there's lots of little nuances, just having good litter management, good ventilation, all that. To me, the feed is not always as important as some of the other things, like management of those sorts of things, environment. You got to have that to go with it. You're missing something there. It's hard to overcome it with feed. Feed can overcome some things, but it can't turn the lights on, turn the feeders on, pick up the dead, do the management things that need to be done in the farm. And what's happening today is these farms are getting bigger and bigger. You don't have as many people. It gets harder to get enough help to make all this work. I mean, the feed, we've got good feed, but you've got to get it out to the birds. You've got to get the feed distributed correctly, especially in pullets and breeders where you're limit feeding.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. PoultryStar is a unique feed ingredient that includes a prebiotic and probiotic, and it's designed specifically for poultry. Improve gut health with PoultryStar. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/poultrystar. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Zoetis Hatchery Health Team helps you raise field-ready birds with a strong immune foundation. Learn more at zoetis.com. Bin Sentry, the world's most trusted feed management platform.
Hi there. Welcome to the Poultry Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. My name's Tim Johnson, and Wisenetics is dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the poultry industry. So get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. So today we're delighted to have Dr. Philip Smith join us. And Dr. Smith is a senior nutritionist at Tyson Foods. And he's got a long history of working in the poultry industry, and I'm really excited to talk with him and learn about some of his experiences and talk a little nutrition. So thank you, Dr. Smith, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So maybe if you can just start, just tell us a little bit about your career path and how you landed at Tyson and some of your experiences along the way.
Sure, I'll do my best. It's kind of a winding way, you know. First off, I graduated from the University of Arkansas with a bachelor's and master's in poultry nutrition, and realizing that I was actually from cattle and did animal science major. That was before they had the poultry science department here, but I could see that there's a lot of job opportunities in poultry. And so I took some poultry classes, and then when I decided to work on my master's, I looked at what was the most available for stipends and for research. And poultry area, I thought about doing swine, but I've wound up in poultry doing some trials with Dr. Nielsen there. And so that kind of got me started doing, research. We did a lot of work with mold inhibitors, propionic acid, and things like that. And when I graduated, there was a position open at Valmac Industries, Tasty Bird Foods. And so that was Blake Lovett and was there, and they needed a nutritionist. So I got an opportunity to go to work there, and just a blessing to work there. I lived in Russellville. We had our offices in Russellville, and so that's where I started. And we had a little research farm. I had five complexes, six feed mills, and so I was just a general all around doing things like that. Donnie Poole was my boss. Bob Good was the veterinarian there. We had a small team of people. Anyway, in about 84, that company got sold to Tyson. And so in 87, I moved back here to the Springdale Fayetteville area, working out of Springdale office. And that gave me the opportunity to go back and work on my PhD. So I started that like in 1989 and finished in 1995. So worked full time for Tyson and worked part time on my PhD. It took me 6 years, but I finally got it. And so I've been here all these years since 1980, altogether counting the Tasty Bird time. So I'm working on 46 years right now. So a good long while, seen a lot of changes, lots of different things, many growth opportunities, and with many new companies and all kinds of things coming our way. And I worked a little bit with the swine, the Tyson swine. They had the pork division, and I formulated for the swine and worked on that a little bit. So, you get tired of doing chickens, you try some different things. So I learned a lot about nursery feeds and sow and gestation, lactation, finishing feeds, and, just a lot of fun worked in with that side of the business a little bit. But anyway, that's kind of, I'm still here today and it's still not easy. There's a lot of challenges. Every day there's something new happens and we have problems. We've been through lots of different ups and downs, but anyway, it's been really good for me and good to my family.
Well, I also really enjoy hearing that the path led you eventually towards furthering your education and that that's possible even when you're already into your career.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
That's an important message to send, I think. So I'm sure, like you said, many things have changed over the years. When you think about poultry nutrition, what are some of the key changes leading into today that have happened and how do we adapt or how have we adapted to that?
Yeah, still feed cost is still a big part of the cost of growing a live bird, producing meat, you know, and so that's the reason I kind of got in. That's where the economics was really important. And that's still true today. Our performance, our genetics has improved, our housing, our management's improved, disease control still, you know, there's ups and downs in that, but we're really such more efficient than we were back in those days. You know, we grew 40, 45 or 50 day old bird and maybe hit, you know, 4 or 5, 6 pounds. Now we do that, you know, in 30 days or 35 days, really quick. And now we're growing much bigger birds, 9-pound birds. So there's all sorts of markets and different things that we're doing, but still feed's the basic piece of that and the foundation. And I work with the pullets and breeders too. So those birds are changing, you know, the hen side challenges have been up and down, genetics. There's not as many options in that side of the deal, but they've really improved and it's really made a big difference. We're producing a lot more pounds and people are eating a lot more chicken. It's such a good value. So it's been, you know, a lot of growth in that area. So that was one of the things when I came in 1980, I don't know what the consumption was, but it was maybe 50 pounds of chicken or 40 or 60 or something. And now it's maybe 100 pounds of chicken per capita. So there's been a big increase in demand for chicken. And it's been so economical, too, that it's really fit and continues on to today and even getting better. I don't see that slowing down. So
a healthy gut leads to healthy chicks. That's where Poultry Star comes in. Poultry Star is a symbiotic, meaning it has both a probiotic and a prebiotic, and it contains live, metabolically active lactic acid bacteria that were isolated from the intestines of healthy birds, not the soil like most competitive products. When you think gut health, think Poultry Star. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/poultrystar.
How about the role of the nutritionist? I mean, has that role changed? I mean, certainly you've advanced in positions over the years, but like the base level nutritionist, how has their role changed?
And basically doing the same thing I did when I started, you know, formulating feed, doing research trials, trying to come up with how to feed the bird better. You know, there's still lots of people changes and you still have the companies change. And so sometimes you have, you know, we're part of the live production services. So we're part of the team of veterinarians, nutritionists, feed milling, hatcheries, and that kind of people. So we're technical people. So that hasn't changed a whole lot, but there's not that many of us. We're a small team, but Tyson is so large. We have, you know, we're not just one complex. We're 30-something complexes. We've got millions of birds being processed every week, all different sizes, all different markets. So, and that's grown and changed. We've closed some complexes at times. We've opened some new ones. So you go through those different storms up and down valleys and peaks and things with the markets. You know, we're trying to sell a good, wholesome product that's, you know, safe, and it's an honorable thing to have a food, you know, having protein, especially these days, is such a part of everybody's wanting more protein for a healthy diet. So chicken's always been a good value in that area. So we're blessed to be in that market right now. It's very good. So
yeah, absolutely. So I'm sure a big part of your world revolves around feed conversion, feed efficiency, right? So do you want to maybe talk a little bit about
always feed conversion, efficiency, you know, livability, 7-day more, carcass yield, carcass quality, especially white meat yield.
Yeah.
Those are the big drivers that drive us, you know. Feed costs can go up and down, markets can go up and down. We've been through some ups and down markets like that. And so we just have to, how do we adjust the feed? Right now, everybody's trying to seem like build more houses, put down more birds. But eventually, you overproduce. You know, we can do that so well, and we'll readjust to that. We'll figure that out, you know, as we have to. We've got a good having good feed ingredient supply. Corn and soybean meal is really helpful in recent, you know. Don't mean we couldn't have a drought and things could change, but the market looks good for corn and soy, and we use a lot of that and other ingredients too. So amino acids, vitamins, minerals, all the things that go into the diets. And it's getting more protein-driven, more amino acid-driven than energy, probably, I'd say. And so because the birds respond to that so well with more white meat yield, carcass yield, those birds are really putting on a lot of breast meat. So that's one of the things that we're adapting to. And we've got some new genetics coming out, and we're working on that hard, trying to figure that out to optimize the, and since it's a big part of the cost. So you don't want to waste, you want to be as efficient producing a pound of live birds and meat to the customer to meet their needs, whatever that is. There's a lot of niche markets too. You could say all veg, antibiotic free, or no antibiotics ever. No antibiotics of human importance. There's all kinds of different niche markets like that, organic as well. But we play in a lot of those kinds of markets, so we have all those different situations, which affects our feed, what we have to come up with for feed, and try to keep that as reasonable as we can.
I would imagine that you kind of touched on it, but a lot of research and development goes into adapting to new things, right? So for a company like Tyson, how do they approach that? I mean, do they have their own research complexes, and how much time does it take to, you talked about maybe a new genetic line or something. What kind of an undertaking is that to figure it out?
Big deal to validate, you know, Cobb's genetics. Of course, we own Cobb. They're part of our team, but they come out with genetics. We try to figure out how to feed it with their help, their team. They have a nutritionist team too. So it's a team effort. We have our own research facilities at Tyson, a small farm with pens, and we do trials, and we have a larger pens and things we do at another farm to validate the small pen work. Plus we use outside research, like CQR, Colorado Quality Research, Dan Moore. We use, others as well. There's some others, as well as universities like Arkansas, Auburn, Mississippi State, Georgia, wherever, to help us collaborate on trials of all kinds of things. Feed additives, nutrient requirements. And we're in the middle of that as far as this new genetics, you know, how to feed it more, to optimize it better. It's new to us.
So how about, you talk about feed additives and things like all the massive array of probiotic, postbiotic.
There's tons of them, yes.
Does that play a big role in your job too, or how does that work?
It has. We've went through the years of trying. Everybody has a newer, better probiotic or enzyme or some sort of essential oil or phytobotanical. There's so many of these things. And we try to do due diligence and look at those products. Where we need them, a lot of them were mainly for antibiotic replacements or to help gut health, that sort of thing. But if they improve feed conversion and improve our efficiency, we'll use them. Obviously, that's what we use things for. And food safety, if it helps with salmonella control, that's another concerning area that we'd have to deal with. Food safety is just paramount. You've got to have that. So, you know, we look at all kinds of things like that. Any sort of anything goes in the feed, of course, the nutritionist, if it's some sort of sometimes a vaccine or medication, the veterinary staff will work with it. We'll work with them on that. So we're so big and so scaleful, we can try different things in different complexes, but it's hard to really isolate because there's so much noise, weather changes, feed quality, disease. We have an ice storm or something comes up, you know, things can go. We can lose houses, tornadoes, things like that. That affects us too. And that can make the numbers look off, you know, from week to week and season to season. So it's better to do your own research in your own pens and your own birds where you have more confidence in it. You know, you're not trying to set the trial up to be a failure or not, but just to see if what it does in your environment. And I like doing that. I've got reams of trials that we've done over the years, and all the way from Tasty Bird days to up to today. And now more and more focused on the genetics right this minute. But that don't mean we're still not looking at other new type products. There's some new ones out there. So, and we are open to those for sure, to listen about those things.
So without giving any proprietary information or naming specific products, I mean, what are you positive on right now for gut health? Like, what types of things are you or not positive on?
Oh, there's lots of things that that have positive things. But how cost effective are they? You know, some of the essential oil things, some of the oreganos, some of the saponins to help with coccy control, and ammonia control and gut health in general, trace minerals and some vitamins and things like that. There's lysos, there's a aramidase, there's different natural medium chain fatty acids that may help control viral and bacterial infections. So we've looked at some of those things where we have a lot of issues with lameness, trying to keep the gut tightness and not have the translocation of enterococcus at times, and which is natural. Those are things we've been working on too, trying to improve, you know, livability and 7-day and things like that. Vaccination things too. Just a lot of general management things, though, having good quality feed, the pellet quality, the crumble particle, anything you can do to make the gut health, the gizzard work more functionally, I think helps, and not getting the feed too powdery. There's lots of little nuances, just having good litter management, good ventilation, all that. To me, the feed is not always as important as some of the other things, like management of those sorts of things, environment. You got to have that to go with it, or you're missing something there. It's hard to overcome it with feed. Feed can overcome some things, but it can't. It can't turn the lights on, turn the feeders on, pick up the dead, do the management things that need to be done in the farm. And what's happening today is these farms are getting bigger and bigger. You don't have as many people. It gets harder to get enough help to make all this work. I mean, the feed, we've got good feed, but you've got to get it out to the birds. You've got to get the feed distributed correctly, especially in pullets and breeders where you limit feeding. But that's a big challenge, is just managing that, making sure the equipment's working. The fans are operating, especially as we get into hot summer or in real cold winter. Those two stress times are really critical for management. So in the fall and in spring, probably you can just throw the birds out on the grass and they do okay. But in the difficult times, and then you need all the help you can get, and feed can help it, but it can't do everything.
So we should probably back up, because when I think about gut health, I think about it from kind of more of the veterinary perspective, right?
Yes.
But when you're thinking of gut health, what are you thinking?
Well, yeah, I'm really like you. I think a lot of, you could use antibiotics like bacitracin and things like that. But ionophores are really a blessing. They help a lot with coccy control. They're for coccy control, but they also have some help with clostridial diseases. So if you can use those, that helps. If you're an all veg and you can't use your NAE, then that makes it where you have chemicals or you can use them, but you got to rotate, or vaccines, and all those things can work. They're part of it. So the gut health, a lot of that's that stuff, the medication. But there are helper things, the antioxidants, it's anti-inflammatory products, the natural saponins, like I mentioned, that can do some things. There's certainly probiotics are used a lot. We do use a lot of those at times, bacillus products, and we've tried many others that help with maybe competitive exclusion. Maybe they release enzymes. Maybe they do some other things. Those things can be added in there as well. There's tannins. There's, you know, different antioxidant things. You know, all kinds of, oh my goodness, these non-nutritive feed additives that have definitely have some benefit. It's just, what do they cost and how much get banged for the buck do you get for it? And we try to manage that by, you know, we want a return on investment. So if we spend a dollar in the feed, can we get a couple of dollars back in some sort of improvement? Weight gain, feed conversion being primarily, or livability, carcass yield. But that's that's part of the deal. If it works, we can use it. If it's just a safety net, mycotoxin binders, sometimes people use those for, if you know if you've got a challenge or you wanted to use it for insurance purposes, that's another possibility of some kind of clay or yeast cell wall or enzyme to break those things down. There's so many, I'm sure, when I'm trying to go through these, I forget a big chunk of the ones I probably should bring up that are out there. But if you don't have to have those things and you don't need them, you can get good results, then there's no reason to use them. That only when you can justify it. That's what I like to look at, you know, in trials.
I think of that a lot, too, about the idea of a safety net. And I think a lot of people get, you know, they get backed into something and it's that worry that what's going to happen when I take this out, right? And I'm sure you talk about that a lot.
Putting it in and taking it out. When you do that, you got a timing. Timing's everything. If you're going into the fall, like you're coming out of the summer, August, September, it's going to be October, you're going to have good results. That's the time to do that. Or if you want to put something in to make it look really good, timing's everything. I think that's a niche thing that you can do, but you can't always do that. And sometimes you want to put something in to help something. You're seeing a problem. They've got a product that's supposed to help with this, and you try it. And sometimes do you have the data to validate? They need to have the good research to validate that it actually has a mode of action that actually works. And it needs to be cost effective, that too. But when you get down to it, you've got to spend millions of dollars. You spend a dollar a ton, and we make 10, 12 million tons a year or more. It's a lot of money, and we don't do that without really thinking about it. We look at it as our money, and so we're cautious about that. But we will spend money and try things, and we constantly do that.
I know the vets get to interact with some of the growers. Do you guys get to interact with the growers much?
I really enjoy going out and walking birds and talking to the growers. And, you know, feed's always a big topic. I'm sending them bad feed. You know, birds aren't doing good. Floors are wet or something's wrong. It's my sorry feed, you know. I think it's good. And I'll have to go to the feed mills, too, and work with the feed mills. If there is issues, we can make mistakes. And we have we're human, so the mills can make mistakes. We get stuff in the wrong bins. One of the things, when distillers dried grains came out, we were one of the first people to use it quite a bit in poultry diets. And anytime you put something new in the feed, there's always, you know, You know, people are skeptical that what you're trying to save money using an alternate ingredient, right? It could be bakery meal, it could be meat and bone meal, it could be hominy, it could be all kinds of different things. But you start out with something new, and everybody's, you know, boy, it's bad stuff. You don't want to put that in your feed because people had bad experiences with it. And to win people over in the field is not easy. And the growers hear it too. So, you know, the growers, the producers out there, they're growing their birds, you know, that. You know, you can back up in management. You know, that's why my birds aren't performing. I don't have the same. I've got something in the feed that's not good or so. You know, you do your due diligence. You really have to be careful and go in when you put something in the feed that if it saves enough money, is it worth it? Can we handle it? Can you get it? Is it consistent? Do you have confidence in it? And even today, we still use distillers grains quite a bit. But everybody had their challenges, especially in the beginning with that. There was variability there, and there's still being variability. There's still variation from soybean meal to soybean supplier. There's some variability. Corn batch to corn patch, every season's a little different. And we try to evaluate and adjust our ingredients to try to adjust for those things. But, you know, we're not perfect. You get samples by the time you're feeding it already. So by the time you figure it all out, you're readjusting, and maybe you're always and the meal can make mistakes. You know, they can there's challenges when you're dealing with that kind of thing all the time. So, you know, we're a big target. If it's not the hatchery, the chick quality, it's the feed. The feed's not too powdery, or, you know, something doesn't smell right or doesn't look right. And we do a lot of assays, and we spend a lot of time looking at, you know, quality control of feed samples. If we have a problem on the farm, we want to pull a sample from that feed right then, get it rushed to the lab, and we'll try. And a lot of times you can't tell what was wrong. The feed may have already been gone that they caused the problem, or it might not have anything to do with the feed. A lot of times it doesn't. So we struggle a lot trying to balance all that, trying to stay on top of it.
Well, so on that trend, I mean, what do you see in the next 5 to 10 years? Like, what are the trends and challenges that you might see coming down the road, and how do you think we're going to deal with some of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, the more amino acids probably, you know, being added synthetic and supplemental because the birds respond to them well. As far as new feed additives, and there's always going to be a bunch of those natural phytogenic things or whatever. We'll have to keep working on that. And genetics is improving. So the birds are growing faster. Maybe the requirements are going to be a little different. Maybe we need we may need more vitamins than than we think we have. We've probably got more already than we really need, but maybe we're missing something there, or maybe the minerals, you know, environmental, animal welfare, those sustainability questions always get brought up. What's the future? And the farmers are always trying to work on that, right? We're always trying to get a better ingredients. Could we genetically modify the corn, or just naturally select the corn for better nutrient content, more energy, more amino acids, more digestibility. Same way with soybean meal, or other crops or other ingredients. How can we make it more better for the birds? And I think that's potentially. These are commodities. Corn and soy are like, you know, they're just basically certain standards for number 2 yellow corn, or certain standards for 46-47% soybean meal, and to break out and make a special identity preserved ingredient's hard. But I have faith that that's going to happen. They're working on it, so that could be a big breakthrough. Genetics, our genetics, and our environment. How much better can we get airspeed? How much better can we get disease control? Could we come up with a better way where we vaccinate, where it's less of a challenge? We have diseases like metapneumovirus, the avian influenza, high path avian influenza. How can we biosecurity and all these things and laryngotracheitis? We still have problems with those diseases that are challenging us today. Could they come up with better vaccines for that, or better ways of dealing with it? But I know the industries are resilient. They come back. They get hit with certain new diseases or whatever. They'll figure out, you know, how to vaccinate, how to get around it. And the feed nutritionists the same way. If we have something, we talk to each other. We listen to all the research. We're always out there trying to find the next best thing. So we're all in that game together, trying to figure out how to produce meat at a lower cost or at least meet their customers' requirements. And that's changing sometimes. So we have that. So we'll have to deal with that too. And I don't know, the political, geopolitical, and all the things that's going on around the world with trade and tariffs and oil and wars and stuff is unsettling and concerning. But people still going to eat, and we're going to try to do our best to do what we've got to work with. So.
You sound confident, though, that we're going to be able to keep up with the growing demand for poultry in the U.S. at least.
To me, the biggest concern too is the scope of these houses that we're building. They're getting so big, 40,000 birds per house when it used to be 20,000 birds per house, and the volume of people it takes to run that. You know, there's a lot of investment. Things cost a lot more, so we're having build new houses, grower pay, and genetics is more expensive. All this pushes us and pushes us to be more efficient in other ways to overcome those things. But, you know, we'll get around it. Just the labor and the people to do all this, automation in the plants, and then how can we make the farms more efficient? And, you know, more things, you know, there's so much automation now and artificial intelligence and things, robotics and things like that, that we're all trying to figure that out too, you know, trying to get better at that. Not just Tyson, but the whole industry is trying to do it.
Yeah, it sounds like if we can avoid catastrophic events, we should be all right, huh?
Well, tornadoes and things and ice storms and stuff can really throw us off. We got generators, we got everything, but sometimes they don't work. And these are totally enclosed houses are great when everything runs. They're not good when the air shuts off. There's a lot of challenges around that. So if we could figure that out better, how to prevent that from happening more. We're working on that all the time. And we need to make the meat more wholesome and more safe and maybe tastier? How can we do that? Make the chicken of choice that people really like. You know, we do a lot of further processing and things like that. Could we, and whole birds and rotisserie and things like, how can we make that bird even better for the consumer? That, you know, they like to taste them. They like it. So, and you can flavor it so many ways. It's such a good protein source.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. At Signify Animal Lighting, we use light as a tool, backed by science to support growth, comfort, and performance. Better light, better animals. Better results with Signify. Barnwell Bio generates actionable health insights from your barn's microbiome. Visit barnwellbio.com. Ben Century is the global leader in animal feed supply chain management, monitoring tens of thousands of feed bins every day. Our technology helps poultry integrators and feed mills enter a new era of increased efficiency, lower costs, higher profitability, and improved worker safety. Ben Century's AI-powered sensors and software replace feed inventory guesstimates and manual processes with precise, real-time inventory data and decision-making. The Ben Century operating advantage is clear, and it's why we're trusted by some of agriculture's biggest names. Learn more by visiting www.binsentry.com today.
So thanks for all this. If someone wants to learn more about nutrition or poultry nutrition, do you have a resource that you like as kind of a primer or a good place to start?
Well, certainly. There's lots of good books. The Nutrition of the Chicken is one of my favorites. An old book, Scott's book from Cornell, and it's an old green edition, but there's plenty of new ones too. Rick Klein and Peter Crystal have a good book out on Masterclass for Poultry or Nutrition Broilers. It's a very good book. Excellent. There's so many, all these good references. The NRC just came out. I haven't seen it, but the new NRC's out. The Brazilian Tables is another excellent. Stagno, those guys do a great job. It gives you great insight on generally how to feed birds with recommendations. And of course, Cobb and Avogen and Hubbard have a genetic. They have their recommendations. So if you're just looking at just trying to figure out how to feed a bird, those are good sources. Any of those are really good sources. And other people, just nutritionists, university people, extension people are good sources. I would always have good communication with the people. The people are really good resources. Not me so much, but a lot of other smart people out there.
Yeah, well, you touch on that network, the small network of nutritionists that kind of run the show across the U.S.
Yeah, around the world,
so,
yes.
So when you've got, you know, if you're a new person coming up and trying to get into this, what do you have some advice for success for them?
Yeah, just be outgoing and be willing to get your shoes dirty, get your hands dirty, get out in the field. You don't have to start at the top. I didn't start at the top. You know, you just got to work your way up. I know it's frustrating. You can get locked in, but just get practical experience. And if you could volunteer, work with a nutritionist, veterinarian, anybody in the livestock industry, get your foot in the door. You need, it's people business. It's all about people, that relationship. If you can build that relationship, do internships, just be extraordinarily outgoing enough and try to be helpful to people, you know, be willing to work. I think that's a big part of it. Just, you know, have the passion for it, have the love for it. You got to have that, of course.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And we really appreciate you joining us. So this concludes another episode of the Poultry Podcast presented by Wisenetics. Thanks you for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you're interested. You can stay updated on the future episodes. And of course, you can always leave review and feedback, which is much appreciated. So thank you, Dr. Smith, and we'll sign out here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.